Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Tuesday. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, a Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. Questions from our Football Insider subscribers. If you want to get involved, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page, and sign up for the texting. And every week, Mary Kay sends out a call for questions and a podcast is born. So let's get started here. It is rookie minicamp week. And so very open-ended question here, Mary Kay, from Abe in Huntington. Hey, Mary Kay, what or who are you most looking forward to seeing at rookie minicamp?
Well, I think it's always, every single year, we always want to see that top pick. You want to see what they look like physically. You want to see how they fit in out on the football field. You want to see if they pass the eyeball test, how they're fitting in. You want to see how they're taking coaching and all of those kinds of things. Now, hopefully with Mike Hall Jr., the defensive tackle that they selected with number 54 overall. Hopefully there will be a few other defensive tackles. Now, we know seventh rounder Juwan Briggs will also be out there. But I want to compare him physically to other people because he's slightly undersized for a defensive tackle, especially some of the ones we're used to here in Cleveland lately. And so I want to just see how he stacks up physically. So that's one thing I will be watching. And then all we keep hearing about is that explosive first step, that explosive first step. And you can't see everything in a rookie minicamp, of course, but I just want to gauge that speed a little bit. You can pick some things up in a rookie minicamp, and that's one of the things that I will definitely be watching for.
Yeah, this is kind of the first eyeball test for a lot of these guys. And, you know, you want to see Mike Hall kind of look different from some of the other guys there because he was a higher draft pick. Like, he should look different, look faster, look more athletic than some of these undrafted guys that are there. And the same goes, you know, like Jamari Thrash. I don't know how much we're going to get to see him run around and show off some speed. You'd like to see a little bit of that. So that's kind of what this is about. I mean, I guess to pull back the curtain a little bit, these practices aren't super intense necessarily. It's a lot of individual work and it's a lot of just a lot of coaching. And there are some weird situations where I remember Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, you know, and that was COVID year, so it was a lot smaller. He was kind of working alone with the linebackers coach during every practice that we were out there because he was the only one there. So there's obviously more guys there now that, again, that was COVID. But it's weird. It's not like a full go practice, but you do see things. And, you know, I remember Anthony Schwartz dropped some passes in rookie minicamp when they were just going through individuals and the coaches were throwing. And DeJuan Jones last year, you know, puked in the middle of practice, which was very telling at the time and kind of showed how far he needed to go. And of course he eventually got there. So it's things like that, that you're really watching for, you know, are simple things. Are the receivers catching the ball? Do they look a little different? Who stands out among all these guys that 90% of them aren't going to have NFL jobs in 4 months? That those are kind of the things you're looking at.
Yeah. And as I mentioned on yesterday's pod, I did talk to Dorian Thompson-Robinson over the weekend. And if his MRI went just fine on Monday, he'll be there throwing the ball. So you will actually get to see Jamari Thrash catching some passes if that goes the way that it's supposed to. And also there should be guys coming off of injuries that will be there as well. So I think in addition to DTR, there should be other players there that are kind of getting their feet wet again, getting back out there, getting acclimated, and also helping out the rookies get through this mini camp. But as you mentioned, this is not something where we will be watching Mike Hall go head to head against Zach Zinter and blow past him on the way to the quarterback. That's probably not going to be happening like that. They will focus a lot on those individual drills. They will get coached up. They, on the very first day, it's like a walkthrough pace, or at least it was last year. It's very slow, and I mean, not slow in terms of the drills go quickly, but they're not throwing every single thing at them right away. But again, you can pick up a number of things. And the other thing is, we are going to get to watch Ken Dorsey coach for the first time. And I'm really anxious to see that, because I just think that there's going to be so much Ken Dorsey stamped all over this new Browns offense. And I'm very anxious to hear the things that he has to say out there, what he's coaching players up on, and just how he has a grasp on everything.
Yeah, we'll get to see him. We'll get to see Deuce Staley coach for the first time. And so it's our first year. We'll get to see Andy Dickerson and that new offensive line staff coach for the first time. So that'll all be interesting too. The other thing that always stands out to me is you go from rookie minicamp to OTAs, and you kind of realize like, oh, okay, yeah, this is different. Like, it's a different speed when you watch rookie minicamp. And again, you've got a bunch of undrafted guys, a bunch of guys that are kind of there to just fill out, you know, try out guys, things like that. And then you get to OTAs and it's the veterans are back in the mix. And some of these rookies kind of have a little welcome to the NFL moment after they get through that rookie minicamp. If they might look great in rookie minicamp, and then it's like, oh, now I got to go against Denzel Ward and Greg Newsome and Martin Emerson on some of these reps. And it's definitely a welcome to the NFL for some of these guys.
Yeah, the other thing that always amazes me, Dan, is the fact that some guys go through the whole pre-draft process. They go through the whole circuit. They make their visits. And sometimes they show up for rookie minicamp and they're not in fantastic shape, right? And sometimes that blows my mind, because you know it's coming. You've got to be ready for it. You want to make that great, great first impression. So we will be looking for that too. Who looks like they're huffing and puffing a little bit? Who looks like they need to work their tails off between now and OTAs and even mini camp, and then what they have to do in that stretch between mini camp and training camp at the end of July, how hard they're going to have to work. So a lot of eyes do get opened this weekend.
And I think the other thing too, that's important is, and I, you know, this is kind of these guys' first days of work, right? For the first days of the rest of their lives, if we want to say that, it is graduation season. So, you know, this is sort of putting them through a training camp schedule for a couple of days, like really getting them in meetings and showing them this is what your life is going to be like as an NFL player. So that's a big part of it. But for us, this is our first chance to get to talk to these guys face to face for the most part. Now, we did do a press conference with Mike Hall and Zach Zinter. We've had some conference calls with these guys, but we're going to get a chance to talk to every single one of these rookies and then even some undrafted guys this week. So for us, it's valuable because this is sort of our first face-to-face interaction with some of these guys.
Yeah. And you really can glean a lot from the very first interviews that you do with these guys. You find out a lot about their character. You find out about their willingness. You find out how much they love ball in some cases. You can tell, you can pick up on that sort of thing. So really, if you are paying attention, there are so many clues to what these players are going to be like and their chances of succeeding in the NFL with those little things that you see in a rookie minicamp.
Okay, so we mentioned another rookie, and we did get a question about him. So let's go to Mike Parker from Chester, Maryland. Hey, Mary Kay, I watched highlights from Jamari Thrash's collegiate career. I think he could be a big playmaker for the Browns. He seems to have abilities that you can't teach. He's a quick twitch receiver with excellent speed, and he can make tight, sharp cuts, often turning short passes into long gains. What is your opinion on his potential?
I think he has tremendous potential. And I think all of those traits that you just mentioned are exactly the reasons why the Browns drafted him. They are looking for a quick twitch receiver that can excel with Deshaun Watson and in this new Ken Dorsey-ish scheme. They are looking for guys that are really good separators that are good with the ball in their hands and that have the high football acumen to make the right decisions. They need to have good football instincts, also almost basketball instincts in some cases, because as we keep saying over and over again, they will be running a lot of, or at least Jamari will be running choice routes where he makes his break based on the leverage of the defender. I'm anxious, and I asked Dorian Thompson Robinson this question. How do you get that timing down between the receiver and the quarterback when you're running those kinds of choice routes? And Dorian said, it's all about communication. They have to be on the same page, on the same page, on the same page. So they're going to have to be talking more during the week. They're going to have to study film together in some cases. If the guy makes this break, I'm doing this. And there are rules that go along with that. But it seems to me there might be some thinking involved in the early going, because this is a feel thing in a lot of cases. And when you're talking about Tom Brady and Julian Edelman or Wes Welker, they had been doing it so long together, right? I mean, they just know each other. And even Josh Allen with Cole Beasley, who is also doing that under Ken Dorsey in Buffalo. They just have their mojo down. And that isn't something that happens overnight. So hopefully Deshaun Watson will be able to get plenty of reps throughout the spring and the summer in training camp so that they can get ready for the new feel and the new vibe on this offense.
Yeah, it's all about, you're going to hear this a ton over the summer and during the season, right? And we hear it all the time anyway. We hear about leverage, and that's sort of what you're doing is you're playing off defenders' leverage. And so you've got to be able to read what you're seeing and make decisions, and the quarterback and the receiver have to be on the same page. And, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of a learning curve for a guy like Thrash, because look, it's not like this was a first round pick. He's got some skills, but these day three picks sometimes might take a little bit of time. But I do like some of the traits he has, and I like some of the ability he has. You know, Lance Reisland's on a scouting reports on all these guys. He's not a contested catch guy. That's something that Lance wrote in his scouting report. He talked about it on the pod on Friday. So there's that. But I just think there's something there with him. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know when we're going to see it, but I think he does have a chance to be a good receiver for this team.
Well, the Browns really liked Ladd McConkey a lot to play this role, but lo and behold, he went number 34 overall. So it was not a pipe dream, but it was wishful thinking to think that perhaps he was going to land to them at number 54. So I think he was somebody that they really liked. Not that he was going to be the choice at number 54, but he was one of them. They had a selection of guys, probably maybe four or five that were in their favorite group at that spot. And Ladd McConkey was one of them. And of course, Mike Hall Jr. was one of them as well. So once those guys started to fly off the board, they were not going to mess around and try to trade back and hope that they could still get Mike Hall. They needed to stay there and get what they got. But Jamari Thrash was an opportunity for them to still add a receiver with this skill set, with these kinds of traits that could come in there and try to excel, as you mentioned, come up the learning curve, but try to excel on these particular kind of routes. And you don't necessarily have to be a great contested catch guy if you're a great separator, because if you're a great separator, then lo and behold, you don't have some guy hanging on you. So he has what it takes. Now, he's not, you know, the fastest guy on the field, and he's not the number one separator on the field, not the biggest guy on the field, but he's really good at all of those things. So he's more than adequate or above average in all the traits that they need at that spot. So I think he is going to get a chance. He's going to get a chance, and other guys will too. Other guys are going to be able to play that role. And whoever can step up into that job is going to have a nice season.
I think that's sort of the interesting thing about where this roster's at right now. You know, early on, it was Andrew was going to draft a bunch of guys, and they had roles and they were pretty clearly defined. And I think now there's just so much more competition because this was his fifth draft class. So, and obviously some guys have cycled out, but and more guys will cycle out next year. But the talent on this roster is such that I'm not saying he's going to turn around and cut some of his draft picks this year, but there's just so much more competition, I think, for these guys when they're showing up. You know, you look at defensive tackle, Mike Hall Jr., I think 2 years ago, three years ago, he probably would have been written in as a starter. And now he's got to compete for some playing time, and I think he'll get it. But there's just a lot more competition across the board on this roster, and that goes for Jamari Thrash, that goes for recent draft picks like Sed and David Bell and all those other guys. Like, nothing is really guaranteed, especially for those guys who are 2 or 3 years removed from their draft classes.
Oh, absolutely. I ran into Maurice Hurst at the flag football event that I went to over the weekend, and I got a chance to talk to him about Mike Hall Jr., who is playing the same three technique position as Maurice Hurst. And he talked about the competition in that room and how it's going to bring out the best in everyone. And it will, because there are going to be more bodies than there are spots on this football team this year. Just the defensive tackle room alone, when you think about it, you've got Dalvin Tomlinson and Siaki Ika at the nose, and also Shelby Harris that can do that. You've got Maurice Hurst. You've got Quentin Jefferson. You've got Mike Hall Jr. going for that three technique spot. And then you've got a number of, obviously, defensive ends that are vying for spots as well. So it seems like someone is going to have to be the odd man out somewhere along the line here, but the competition is going to be great. And it is going to, as Maurice said, bring out the best in these guys. And if Mike Hall Jr. wants to get in there and get playing time, he's going to have to work harder than he's ever worked in his life. Look what happened to Siaki Ika last year, right? He stepped into a very crowded room. Now, a third round pick is a player that you would expect to contribute something in their first year, especially when the third round is the highest round that you're picking in that year. And we heard all about how he was a Ferrari and they had kind of great expectations for him and they were really excited about him. And it's such a deep and talented defensive line that he had a hard time getting on the field. He had a very difficult time getting on the field. I think he played like 100 snaps. So I think that Mike Hall Jr. is going to contribute this year as long as he does the work and shows that he deserves to be on that field more so than Quentin Jefferson and Maurice Hurst and Shelby Harris at times. He's got to do the work, and I'm sure he will, but this is time to put on your big boy pants and show that you're ready for this amazing, amazing opportunity.
Yeah, I'm looking at Ika's game log right now. He played the games where he played the most snaps were the blowout win in Houston on Christmas Eve. He played 27, and then against Cincinnati, he played 39 snaps. And that was the game when the Browns arrested everybody. So it was tough for him to get on the field. The only other two games he played in were the Chicago game and the Jets game. And that game was a little bit of a blowout too. He played 34 combined snaps in those games. So, he's got a ways to go. He's one of those guys that, if you want to get eyeballs on once OTAs roll around, see kind of what he looks like and, see if he's in a little better shape and if he's ready to maybe take another step. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the veterans on this team and also the outlook for the Browns in the AFC. Back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, Hey Mary Kay Edition, Mavro and C-Bus. Hey Mary Kay, as we slowly start ramping up, first question, has Deshaun Watson hinted at throwing during OTAs? And second question, do we expect to at least see Nick Chubb? Maybe not playing, maybe not on the field, but will we get eyes on Nick Chubb?
I think we will get eyes on Nick Chubb. In fact, I talked to Pierre Strong Jr. at this very productive flag football event that I went to on Saturday, and I was talking to him about Nick, and he said, Nick is in there working his tail off. He's an inspiration to everyone. He's the leader in that room. So they are all in there still looking up to Nick Chubb as someone that they aspire to be like. And that's amazing. Just his very presence elevates the performance and the attitude of that room. So good for him that he's there. He's around. We saw his Instagram the other day where he showed Batman fallen and then rising. And it was symbolic. And I think that's Nick trying to say, count me out all you want, people, but I am not going anywhere. And that's great. The Browns need that. His teammates need to see that. So good for him with that. And then as far as Deshaun Watson is concerned, Deshaun, when he did give that last press conference, he did say that the plan is for him to do some throwing in these OTAs. The fact that his surgeon wants him to be conservative doesn't mean he's not going to throw at all. I just think that they want it to be measured. They'll probably have him on a pitch count, and it will be monitored very closely and very carefully. Obviously, there's no contact or anything like that, and you don't even really, really get rolling in these OTAs until you get a little further in. So I do think that we will see him throwing in OTAs and mandatory minicamp, but I think we're going to see plenty of Jameis Winston, and that's good, and plenty of Tyler Huntley, and some of Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And I think all of that is good because Jameis Winston is going to be have to be ready to play. And it's new terminology for him again. It's a new scheme. It's new personnel. And not everybody can step into a situation like Joe Flacco did last year and all of a sudden be firing passes 50 yards downfield to Amari Cooper. Sometimes there's a little bit of an adjustment period, especially with some of the new routes that are going to be going on and tweaks in the offense. So I think it's good that everybody is going to get their chances and that Deshaun will have an opportunity to continue his rehab throughout the spring.
Yeah. Going back to Chubb, it's interesting. It sounds like he's pretty much been in Cleveland most of this offseason, if not the whole offseason. He's usually a guy that has gone back to Georgia and worked out there and kind of done his own thing. But it sounds like through this rehab process, he's been in Cleveland a little more than normal. So I don't know if we're going to see him, but we might see him wander out on the field. We might see him he might be around. That would be fun to see. Maybe he'll show up at rookie minicamp. Probably not, but come on, Nick, give us something. Let us put eyeballs on you.
I wonder if they'll make him available to us at some point during OTAs. Now, we are only out there three times during OTAs, once each week. So it's not like we get to stand out there and watch every single OTA practice, and there are 10 of them. But we'll see him somewhere, hopefully. Hopefully they'll make him available, and then we'll definitely see him around, I think, at the mandatory minicamp. Not on the field. People need to temper their enthusiasm. He's not really going to be practicing. If he sets foot on the field in a 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 in minicamp, I would be absolutely shocked. I would be shocked. I mean, Nick does blow us away with a lot of things, but I don't think that's in the cards right now. I think they're looking to get him on the field some in training camp and just let him continue to heal and see how that all goes. But I also think that people need to manage their expectations, and we need to help manage those expectations. If people think that Nick Chubb is going to go out and rush for 120 yards in the opener this season, I think people are going to be let down if that's what they think is going to happen with Nick. He's going to need some time. It doesn't mean he's not going to be the Nick Chubb that everyone knows and loves. It just means he probably needs a little grace, a little time, a little patience.
Yeah, even when he does get back on the field, whenever that is, and I would be shocked if he's on the field in early September. I might be surprised if he's on the field in September at all. Even when he does come back, like you said, it's not going to necessarily look like Nick Chubb right away. And there's a scenario where, sometimes it's the year after the year. So there's a scenario where maybe even if he gets back in October next year or November, maybe he still doesn't kind of look like himself, and maybe he looks a little more like Nick Chubb the following year, and you hope that's in a Browns uniform. But, that would just be another thing for Andrew Berry to have to work out. But, he's 20. How old is he? 28 years old. Yeah, he'll be 29 in December. So he's got his age working against him. This was a pretty gruesome injury. I think it's going to take time before we see Nick Chubb look like Nick Chubb. And there's also the possibility we might never see consistently that level of Nick Chubb. I wouldn't put anything past him. Like you said, he can work miracles, but we just have no idea what this is going to look like and when it's going to happen.
When you think about it, he has had every single ligament and piece of cartilage in that knee repaired to some extent, and things that we haven't even, that we don't know what those things are. So every single one of those things have been repaired in that knee, and sometimes twice, including the ACL, the MCL, the PCL, whatever else CLs there are in there. He had it repaired. So it's amazing that he's even at this point where we are even talking about him coming back and playing at some point this season or in the first half of this season. But because he is Nick Chubb, because he is a freak of nature, because he defied all of the odds at Georgia and came back after that devastating knee injury to become one of the best running backs in the NFL, that's why we know we can't put anything past him. And we know there have been medical advances. We know there are healing modalities. And he is so determined and trying to set such a great example for everybody on that football team that you can never count him out. But I just hope everybody is a little bit patient with him.
This is one of those moments that we always talk about. Like, you can't believe a guy's been in the league this long already. He'll be going into year number 7 this season, which is just that whole era. You know, it's hard to, I don't know, maybe it was just because of the way it happened. It came out of that, the 1-31. So it's, you still think of all these guys as super young guys, but you know, we've talked about it. Miles has been around a while now. Nick has been, these guys are becoming like the older guys in that locker room all of a sudden.
They really are. It's so bizarre to think about the fact that they have been around that long. It just seems like yesterday that they drafted Miles and Baker and Nick and Denzel. And now they are the seasoned, savvy veterans that have outplayed the average of the NFL already, in some cases significantly. The average is about 4 years. And so these guys are well beyond that. And when they start turning 30, well, then just forget it. It's all over, because I just can't bear the thought of Miles and Nick and those guys being 30 years old already. That means we're getting older too. And I just don't like it.
Right. Exactly. Well, the good news is Miles and Nick will be 29 in December. So we've still got some time before they turn 30, but it's coming fast. I don't like it.
I know, right?
It's starting to make me feel old again. Okay. Question from Carloso in Plymouth, Massachusetts. He was reading a guy that we've had on this podcast before, Ben Volen of the Boston Globe, who put the Browns 9th out of 16 in the AFC. He included the excerpt that he wrote. So he said, hard to know what to make of these guys. They had a surprising 11-6 season, but got crushed in the wild card playoffs by Houston. Deshaun Watson is back and went 5-1 last year, but hasn't played well in 2 seasons. Jerry Jeudy could be a decent addition on offense, and Myles Garrett is one of the 5 best players in the NFL. But the Browns feel ripe for a regress to the mean type of season. So Carloso's question is, hey, Mary Kay, how would you respond with Ben Volen putting the Browns 9th out of 16 in the AFC, and his explanation?
Well, I can see why outside experts and writers would do that, because nobody knows what to make of Deshaun Watson. And the truth of the matter is, we don't know what to make of Deshaun Watson or to expect from Deshaun Watson either. If we knew for sure that the last 25 guys that had this fractured glenoid bone and partially torn labrum repaired came back and went on to win 10 games or 11 games the season after their surgeries, then I think we would have some data, some confidence that perhaps that will happen in this case as well. But we don't have anything that tells us that. Now, I've said this before on this pod. I've talked to a surgeon that I know very well, an orthopedic surgeon who has done this very surgery before and who has also worked for an NFL team before. And he assures me that it's much better that Deshaun Watson had this surgery than a torn rotator cuff. He's optimistic about the comeback, and the Browns are optimistic about the comeback, and so are Deshaun's people. So from that standpoint, if he is that healthy, then I think that they should be able to win 10 or 11 games. I'm going to put an asterisk on it, however, and that is, they have right now, just from a one loss standpoint, from a win percentage total, they have the toughest schedule in the NFL coming up in 2024. That is remarkable. That's really significant. When you have the hardest schedule in the NFL, it's hard sometimes to overcome that. And from a Vegas projected wins total, which is the one that Sharp Football Analysis uses, they have the third hardest schedule in the NFL. So by both of these metrics, the Browns are going to have a tough way to go in this coming year. And if you just rattle off the quarterbacks, I mean, it is an all-star cast of quarterbacks. They are facing almost every one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They're missing very few this season, and they barely played any last year. So I think that's also very, very significant. It's a much tougher schedule and much tougher quarterbacks all across the board. So I think they have the capability of winning 10 or 11 games, but they also, they won a lot of close games. They caught a few breaks here and there. Everybody does, but they caught a few end of game breaks, at least two for sure that I can think of that easily could have gone in the other direction. I'm talking about San Francisco and Indianapolis. So one or two of those games goes the other way. And I often think, what would we be talking about right now? How would the season have ended? How would the offseason have gone if they had missed the playoffs by not winning one of those crazy finish games? But I think 10 or 11 is possible, but I think it will be harder to get there this year.
Yeah. And, you know, there's other situations too. I mean, they didn't have to face CJ Stroud in December. They faced Case Keenum. Now, I know Browns fans are going to say, and rightfully so, well, the Browns were starting Joe Flacco in that game. So, okay. I get that. But I feel like they have gotten a little bit of a pass for what happened in that wild card game.
Yes.
Like, that was bad. And the thing that you kind of hung your hat on, your defense, was really bad. At some point, Joe Flacco was going to have a game where he, maybe not through back-to-back pick sixes, but he was going to have a game where he turned the ball over a bunch. But your defense just laying an egg like they did in that game was brutal. So I think they've gotten a pass on that, honestly. So I don't know. I'm looking at the AFC teams. To say ninth out of 16 is a little shocking, but there are just a lot of good teams in the AFC, and I think the Browns can be one of them. But just kind of looking at the standings last year, even if some of these teams regress, like Baltimore or Buffalo, those are two good teams. Kansas City, Houston, Miami should be good again. Cincinnati will be better. Indianapolis will be in the mix. The Jets are getting Aaron Rodgers back. You can get to nine teams pretty quickly. I'm not saying all those teams will be better than the Browns, but I'm just saying, like, the AFC has a bunch of really good football teams. So I think, could I see the Browns, Sean comes back and they win the division? Sure. Could I see them struggling maybe against some better teams and they win eight or nine games or seven to nine games? Yeah, I could see that too. I think the AFC is a really talented. This is probably as good as the AFC has been in a while, honestly.
Yes, it's good. And some of the teams that the Browns are going to be playing, and I think this would make a good pod down the road one of these days. Some of the teams the Browns are going to be playing, this is a post-schedule coming out pod, have added some really amazing talent. And I think that would be really cool to go back and look at some of the players that they're going to be facing that they would not have had to be dealing with before the free agency cycle and the draft. But I'm talking about Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr. and some of the guys that have switched teams and will be showing up either on the Browns' doorstep or on the road when the Browns play them. So that's going to be really interesting. Yes, the AFC is incredibly difficult, and so many of the quarterbacks are so good. And in some cases, like Pittsburgh, they've completely overhauled their quarterback situation, and you never know what you're going to get there. You've got Joe Burrow coming back healthy. So there's a lot going on, not just in the AFC North, but in the AFC as a whole. And it is not going to be easy. Deshaun Watson is going to have to come back and hit the ground running and be on point all season long.
Yet, I will say I disagree with putting the Browns ninth. I wouldn't put them ninth in a power ranking, but I can see I can see how you, like I said, there's just a lot of good teams in the AFC. So some of it just depends on how you feel about a team like Indianapolis, or how good do you think Cincinnati's going to be? Things like that. So I wouldn't put them that low, but like I said, you can get, you start listing the good teams in the AFC, you get to 8 and 9, you get to 8 or 9 teams pretty quickly. Another and then the Deshaun unknown is a huge, like you said, it's that's the biggest part of this. How can you even decide how good this team is going to be if you don't know what you're going to get out of Deshaun?
Absolutely. I mean, then there are other teams that are in that same boat. The Colts have Anthony Richardson. You know, there are other teams, the Steelers, they don't know what they're going to get out of Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. So that there are other teams that have uncertain quarterback situations, and you just, it's really kind of hard to pinpoint how you think they're going to do. And with teams where you know that you've got Lamar Jackson, you know what you're going to get from him, you know their defense is going to be good, you know they're going to have a good running game, you can kind of say, hey, they're going to win 10 games again, or they're going to win 11 games or 12 games, somewhere in that neighborhood. But when you don't know what the quarterback is going to be able to accomplish, it makes it tough. But that also, we've got to put that on the list, Dan, another pod. Let's do our power rankings for the AFC. If Ben Volen, my friend, my good friend Ben Volen, can do that right now, certainly we can do it too.
Listen, we got lots of pods to do, so yeah, we can do a I think we've done like a power ranking before. I think we did it the way we always do things. I think we drafted teams. Yeah. But I'm always up for power rankings and for anything that's a draft. Which, speaking of the schedule, I don't know when it's coming out, but we've got lots of schedule pods to do. We always try and pick the schedule. We're always way off, so last year I had our texters do it. I think they did a poll and they ordered the schedule, and it was incredible. We got so many entries. They were all pretty different, and nobody even came close to getting the ultimate schedule. So I think it's always fascinating. You can sit here and try and predict how this thing is going to look. And if you get like 3 games right, that's pretty good. So we'll have to do our schedule drafts hopefully next week. I mean, I don't know. We haven't heard when the schedule's coming out yet.
No, what if they spring it on us and it's this week?
Yeah, see, that would be no fun. We need lead time.
I know. Usually they hype it up and build it up. So, I mean, would they do that? Just spring it on us on Thursday night of this week already? I can't see that happening, because usually they announce the international games first. So that would mean that would have to happen by today or tomorrow. And there would have to be a lot of promotion for this Thursday night television show that they're going to do. I don't know if it's going to be this week. People have told me they think that's possible, but I don't know. It seems like a reach.
Yeah. And I mean, they usually announce they do the international games on Good Morning America and those big like morning shows. They'll announce those games. And so to not have heard that that's coming, it's just strange. I don't know. This calendar is all off this year. I don't know why, if it's the leap year or what, but I'm all thrown off on when things should happen. Okay. That will do it for this edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, a Hey Mary Kay edition. Those questions came from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page to get signed up for that and become one of our texters. You can find us on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. You can find us on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk. And of course, find this podcast, if you aren't already subscribed, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Mary Kay, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.